This is Jessie Wilkerson, and I'm with Betty Anderson in Huntsville, Tennessee, and the date is August 15th, 2010. So Betty, I wanted to start by asking you about your childhood. Where did you grow up, and okay. What was your family like?
I grew up in Smoky Junction, lived there till I graduated high school. I was the oldest of 11 children. My daddy worked in the coal mines, and my mother was a homemaker. And she married very young, had me the next year after she was married. And so we lived on a small farm, and we had the usual animals, a cow and a horse, chickens. From time to time, we would raise a hog to have. My mother always had a big garden. She canned a lot. And later on, when we got electricity to Smoky in the mid-50s, she was able to have a freezer. And so it was easier, to freeze some of the stuff that she grew. And my daddy became disabled and had several ailments. The main one is emphysema brought on by smoking and black lung working in the coal mines. And he died in 1968. My mother is 90, be 91 in December, still lives by herself. We do have a person who goes in and cooks for and cleans now during the day, but she stays by herself at night. She's quite independent, mm-hmm. And but she's beginning to break a little bit. She's getting pretty forgetful, and that's why we have somebody, because we're afraid she'll set the house on fire, because she was a couple of times she left things on the stove, forgot about them, mm-hmm. And so that's when we decided to have somebody to go in and help her. And I've always been real close to all my family. There's only 4 girls left now. All the others have been deceased. There was 7 boys and 4 girls. And I guess that's about my childhood. That's probably about the mm-hmm. only thing.
What was it like growing up with 11 children?
It was very interesting. I was always known as the lazy one. Because I played basketball, started playing basketball when I was in the 7th grade. And my mother said she learned her lesson with me. She had worked real hard in her home. She had a bunch of brothers to wash clothes for on the washboard. And said she always said in her mind, if she had a child, she would not make it work like she had to work. So, but she learned her lesson real fast with me. She, when she started having other girls, the other girls came. There was me and then 2 boys and then Faye, my first sister. And by the time Faye came along and got to be a teenager, she was taught how to cook and how to clean and how to do all sorts of things. And I never did learn that at home much. Now, I was a pretty good babysitter. I would take care of the smaller ones while she went and worked in the garden. The biggest thing I ever did on the farm, I think, was pick blackberries. We all picked blackberries every summer. Mm-hmm. And of course, my boys went to work. My brothers went to work very young. I think Charles was like 16 when he started driving a truck. But all of us graduated from high school except two, and they quit like in junior year, something like that, for whatever reason, you know, I don't know. All of us have, I think, did fairly well, you know, education-wise. One of my sisters became a beautician, and she was her own boss for till she got tired of it, got burned out. And my baby sister went to business school in Knoxville. Atrice went to business school, and then went to Maryland and lived with Faye and her husband, worked for Nationwide Insurance, and she didn't like that at all, so she came back to Knoxville and looked up and got a job with the state and worked there for 34 years, did quite well. And Ellie lives in Georgia, and she worked in one of the carpet mills down there for 27 years. And then she just got real fed up with it, and so she quit. And she went to work at the urging of my sister Faye as a caregiver for elderly people and loved it. Mm-hmm. But 4 years ago she fell and hurt her back, and she hasn't been able to work since. And of course Faye is now dead, but she did that for a number of years. She was excellent. She was the one girl that didn't finish high school. She married young, had three children, and she began, I don't know how many years ago, working with the elderly, and she was marvelous. And she worked with mostly Alzheimer's patients and just did a super job. And at her urging, Ellie started working with the elderly down in Georgia and really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And said she wished she'd have done it years earlier. And Joan went to, the baby went to business school, and then she married right out of business school, and she and her husband spent 22 and a half years in the Army, and half of that time in Germany. And then they came back, and he went to work, when he retired from the service, he went to work for the state of Tennessee at Brushy Mountain Prison, and he lived 10 years, and he died in heart surgery 5 years ago. And she works down in Harriman for a company, I don't know what it's called now, it used to be Chase, and they make medical files for hospitals and doctor's offices and that sort of thing. And she is their purchasing agent. She purchases all their supplies, and she got this job because of her employment. One time he was in the service, she worked for the government, like on the base hospitals, and learned to do how to buy supplies and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So she's got a pretty good job. And we've just always been real close, the family has. We've gone through a lot of hardship, a lot of sickness, and but it seemed like we always bounce back.
So what was Smoky Junction like?
It's a very rural area. When I grew up, we had two little grocery stores there. And the Tennessee Railroad goes up through Smoky to haul coal out of that region. Goes on into Anderson County. And of course, it's not being used now, but from time to time they'll open up some coal mines up there, and they'll haul coal out. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we played softball, always very active. We had two churches in the community. And there was many more people there when I grew up than there are now. Because all of the young people have had to leave in order to get jobs. And so there's not a third of the people there now as there was when I was growing up.
So did most of the people rely on the mines?
The mines, and a few of them worked in Oneida, but even most of that is gone now. Scott County has the highest unemployment rate in the state. It's running about 20%. And a lot of people go from here to Anderson County, that industrial park. I know, I have a nephew or grandnephew that works, well, a couple of them, that work over in that area for Food Lion and some of those different companies that are in that Eagle Bend industrial park.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just not much to do around here now. If you don't work for the county, you know, political system and the courthouse or the school system, there's just nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, my boys, Randy works for Mayfield's. He worked for Mayfield Dairy in Knoxville. He's in his 27th year. And he came back over here and bought some property in Smoky because he always said he wanted to come home. And his wife's from Minnesota. And Mayfield's has a station up near the Kentucky border in Winfield. And so he drives 45 minutes to work. And he delivers milk in the city of Oneida. And he goes to Williamsburg, Kentucky twice a week. And Scott came back over here when he was 18, right out of school, went to work in the mines, worked in the mines for 20 years. And then he started driving coal trucks. And that's what he was doing when he died. He had a massive heart attack 4 years ago and died 4 days later.
Mm-hmm.
They both have done, did quite well, you know, even though they, Randy has animals. He has horses, goats, chickens, ducks, dogs. They don't have any, well, they got some cats at the barn, I think, now. But she loves animals. She was raised on a farm in Minnesota. And when she came from a fairly good sized family. Her daddy was a truck driver, and her mother ran a restaurant. She worked on a turkey farm when she was in high school in order to buy her school clothes, she said. And she's one of the most talented women that I've ever known. She loves animals, and she has two sons. Now she has a grandchild, one little girl. And she came to Knoxville with a husband that worked at UT Hospital in some research technical thing. I don't know exactly what he did, but that's why they came to Tennessee. And her boys were raised up in Knoxville. And one went back to Minnesota, and the other one now lives in Harrogate. Works in Morristown, and he's working to become a commercial helicopter pilot. That's what he's studying and working to, and his wife is a RN nurse. And the reason they're back in Harrogate, that's where she's from, but they came back, and she's going to go to nurse practitioner school at LMU.
Mm-hmm.
And both of my boys did quite well. Scott has two sons, and then the two stepdaughters. And one of his sons is about to become a daddy, so the Anderson name will continue. And the other one is, he's not married, he lives with a girl that has three children that he has sort of adopted. And he works over in North Carolina for a trailer company. And Jeffrey is working in Washington right now for a contractor that they're doing something to a sewer project at that Army base right behind the White House. And he has worked for the on railroads for years, but he just took this job, said he'd been trying to get it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I don't know much about it. Their next job is going to be at the tunnel going under Chesapeake Bay in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be working on that, redoing that tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that's the supervisor is from Scott County. And I don't know how he has known him, but he said, I've been trying to get a job with him for 3 years. But he has worked all over,
mm-hmm.
and he sort of likes that. I don't know how it's going to be after this baby comes, whether he makes good money, and I don't know whether he could settle down to less money coming back and working in Scott County or not.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
So how did you learn about Save Our Cumberland Mountains?
Well, I came on a Friday night to my mother and stepfather. My mother remarried 5 years after my daddy died, and she married a retired coal miner. Marvelous man. I went to school with his children and knew him all my life. His wife had been dead for 3 years. My daddy had been dead for 5 years when they married, and they lived together, I think, 19 years before he died. And we all became quite fond of him, and the grandkids were all crazy about him, the great-grandkids. I went to a meeting at the Norma School where they showed a film that had been done about strip mining. Of course, I knew about Saucon before that time, but because I'd read about the work they were doing in the New Sentinel. And I had my two brothers next to me worked in strip mines, and I hated it. I was very much against it. I remember the first strip mine I saw was when I was living with my uncle and his wife in Oak Ridge, right not too long after I graduated high school. We came down to the southern part of Scott County quite often because that's where my aunt was from, and we visited her relatives down there at least one Sunday a month. And my uncle stopped the car one day down in the Coal Hill area, and he said, I want to show you something that's going to ruin this country. And we walked just maybe 300 feet off of the county road, and all of a sudden there was a 50-foot hole in the ground. And that was the first strip mine that I had ever seen. Of course, that was before my brothers ever went to work in strip mining. This was in 1953, 54, somewhere along there. And this hole was high full of water. You know, and any child could have, I remember thinking, you know, any kid could run through these woods and fall in that hole and drown, and no telling how long it'd take to find them. You know, that was my first thought of what the danger was. And but anyway, I went to a film that with my stepfather, and a group of miners was showing showing this film. Well, Sonkin staff was showing it, but it was being shown to a group of retired miners, UMW workers. And we went to see it, and it was the Stripping of Appalachia, I think was the name of it. Billy Christopher sung the song in it. It was done by a British network. John Gavina was involved in it. And we had a discussion about strip mining after the movie was shown and everything. And so Sonkin staff, it was two women, Helenette Cook and Jane Samples, I think was her name, invited us to a Sonkin meeting at Rosedale up in Anderson County.
Carol and Junior.
Yeah, up New River. And we went to this meeting. It's in March of 1974. And that's when I was elected secretary. And I was invited to play basketball. Mm-hmm. And we had this meeting, and that's when I met Maureen and several other members. So I became secretary, and at that time we met in different communities every month. And of course, we would vote on different issues. And one community, you know, heard all the details, and we voted based on staff recommendation or discussion that came up that day or whatever. And then we might find out 2 or 3 months later that it probably wasn't the smartest thing to have done it the way we did. We were very unorganized in those very early days, and everything was done by the seat of our pants, more or less. But J.W. Bradley was the first president, and he was president for 5 years and was very much opposed to strip mining and educated himself. He was an electrician at K-25. Oak Ridge, very smart man, very, very much against strip mining. He still is. He just had his 80th birthday. And so then I traveled around to different communities every time we had a meeting. And it was places I'd never been as I was growing up. You know, but this time I was in my 30s, I guess. This is 70, say 36. Yeah, I was in my mid-30s. And I went to communities that I'd never been to in my life, like Clairfield, you know, Elk Valley. Well, Elk Valley, I'd been there because I had an aunt that lived over there. But all different communities up New River, and we had several meetings. I remember we met up in the Fort Mountain area 2 or 3 times trying to get some swinging bridges that had washed out on New River, and kids couldn't get across the river to go to school. We ended up getting the National Guard from over in Knoxville to come over there and build these swinging bridges back. Anderson County, it only took $1,200 worth of material to build this swinging bridge. But Anderson County couldn't find time to do it or wouldn't do it. But they did finally buy them lumber, and the Army National Guard built it. So that was a big project. It went on for 3 or 4 months. And just fighting all the different permits that came up. and the overloaded trucks on all county roads and all the counties involved was a big project. I mean, you know, there was potholes from one end of the road to the other, brought on by overloaded trucks. And that was a big problem up in the area where I grew up. The roads always got real bad during the winter time. And of course it was mostly deep mining when I was growing up. All the strip mining came later after I was grown. And getting involved with soccer, I think was one of the most educational things that I ever did. I had a job where I had to deal with the public, and I loved that, and I was good at it. But the things I learned working with soccer was, you know, it just, not everybody gets a chance to do that.
What did you learn?
Well, I learned how to facilitate meetings. I mean, all the different workshops that are offered and that sort of thing. I mean, it doesn't bother me to get up and speak before a group. But I'm not good at writing things. I never was. And that's always been one of the things that I was not good at, is writing. And but anyway, I just, they would give me a job to do. If they would write the materials, I'd memorize it or whatever, I'd learn it and I'd get up and talk about it. I never had any problems with that. But just the people that I met, friends that I now have that I didn't know until I was involved with something. And it's just invaluable to me. I mean, like Mo, there's Boomer Winfrey. He was a Saucom staffer, and he's a geology major from UT, but he's never worked as a geologist, I don't think. He lives in Lake City, and he now works, does media consulting, and he used to be a writer, and he may still have it. I don't know if he's doing that now or not. Writing for the La Follette Press, mm-hmm. And he lives in Lake City. That's where Maureen does her gardening. She uses his garden space. It's close to the Saucom office, and she lives in Jacksboro now. And they're real good friends. And,
well, can you describe what it was like to be a woman? You come from a coal mining family, you had brothers who were involved in strip mining. What was that like to enter an organization that was fighting some of those issues?
My oldest brother would talk to me, he and I could talk about it. He drove the big, what do you call them? It's not a tractor, the big bulldozer that dozed all the coal out. That's what he did. And he was very good at it. And he and I could sit down and discuss it. In fact, he would tell me a lot of things that were going on. And my second brother, he always felt like that we were trying to take their jobs, destroy their jobs, and in a way we were. But he and I would argue. Every time we got together, it was a fight. And even though we were real close and everything else, well, we thought about this. And so it was, I didn't get involved with something until after my daddy died. My daddy would have been very much against strip mining had it been going on. Well, I guess it had started some before he died, but my brothers weren't involved in it. We didn't know as much about it. But it was pretty hard. Some of our family fights were, and we disagreed on it a lot. And of course, Charles is dead now too. But when the clear cutting started, just a few, he died in 96. But I remember him telling me, he said, "Sis, you thought the strip mining was bad. Just wait till we get through with the clear cutting in this part of the country." He said, "It's going to be much worse than the strip mining." And it's turned out it has been, I think. Because if you go up through, these woods are just stripped now. And when there's a real heavy rain, the water just runs down and fills the river up fairly fast. And it didn't used to do that. See, there's nothing to hold it back now. And I remember having that conversation with him not too awfully many years before he died. But and that was true with a lot of families. It was easier for me to speak out against strip mining because I lived in Knoxville. I wasn't here, you know, where it was actually going on. And I know a lot of people resented. I have people that don't talk to me today because of Sonka. And I had one person tell me at the funeral home one night that he knew that Sonkham had knocked him out of his $28,000 a year job, and that he felt like I was part of it. And he was an employee at the local funeral home, and he just came from a family that I'd known all my life. And he just didn't understand what the harm was. And strip mining did not give that many local people jobs. They're just not there. But that the coal industry hands out all this information about how many people they've got working for. Well, they don't say that, you know, half of them are in another state. You know, even now, what, there's some stripping going on on Zeb Mountain, which is just about 10 miles maybe from here, up that away. And I'd say that 90% of the employees probably come out of Kentucky. And there's very few local people. There's some local people that have trucks that haul the coal. And that's the biggest part of it. Most of them come from out of state. And it's just, you know, people will not admit that. But when you look at where they're coming from, that's where they are. I guess the biggest thing is learning all the things I learned while I was working as a volunteer for Sonka, was how to deal with people more, all of the public meetings we had, public hearings, I always had to participate in those, and then the people I met, you know, throughout the years, it just really meant a lot. Where my closest friends are.
Mm-hmm. Had you been very political before you got involved in Sonka?
No. I had always, I started voting when I was 18. I have missed one vote in my lifetime. And that was in Knoxville. I don't remember what year, but it was probably in the late 70s. I missed the vote. It was when Leonard Rogers was mayor, and I don't think he had any opposition, but I served on the Mountain People's Board, that's local health clinic, and I got involved with that through Sockham also, and I came came to Huntsville to a board meeting one night and missed the vote in Knoxville city election. And that's the only time I ever missed a vote in, since I started voting. But my daddy was very political, and we used to discuss politics all the time. And so I was always involved that way, but it was mostly from within the family, you know, discussions.
Was your daddy in a unionized mine?
My daddy was a member of the UMW mine worker, very, very active, and he was very much a union man.
Mm-hmm.
And his brothers were also.
How do you think, do you think that influenced you at all, seeing?
Well, it
men
did.
Organized?
I think that I learned from an early age that you had to be involved politically, or you should be. And but you know, and during those years, there was not much that women could do, you know, other than go vote. It just wasn't done. I know my mother always voted, but we did. We had these political discussions. My daddy always said he was the only person that I knew of that could read a paper and watch television and listen to all the kids around him all at the same time. But he was pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And but he always worked in county politics. On election day, you know, he would work at the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother didn't, but he always discussed politics with us. And the first time I remember us really listening to the presidential election was when Thomas Dewey and Roosevelt, is that who it was? It's when Roosevelt became president.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas Dewey was he the Republican that ran? I forgot.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And well, anyway, that's the first national election I remember. And that was like 1945.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I was born in 36. But I remember hearing the discussion about when Roosevelt was elected. I think when the papers printed that Dewey won, but actually Roosevelt did, is that right?
I think I vaguely know that history.
Well, anyway, that's the first election national election that I remember hearing talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But
do you think, were your parents supporters of Roosevelt?
Yeah. My daddy, in his early years, he was a Republican, but he became a Democrat. And my mother was, this is the first time that she didn't go vote this time. She said she just did. There were so many people running, and she didn't know any of them, and that she was just not going to fool with it. And we didn't encourage her to, because she's getting rather forgetful. And she's getting feeble, so we didn't push her when she said she didn't want to go vote.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't say anything. But no, the whole family, my father's parents were politically involved. My grandfather was a deputy sheriff at one time in Scott County.
Mm-hmm.
He and his oldest son and. My daddy was the baby of two families. My grandpa Anderson had one family. He had six kids, I think, of the first one. And then he married my grandmother, and they had three children.
Mm-hmm.
And daddy was the baby of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I just wouldn't take anything from my Sock 'em education, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
And and learning the things that, you know, we made trips to Washington, mm-hmm. and we went up there to, the first time I ever went, we went to lobby on the National Strip Mining Bill, mm-hmm. which was finally passed in 77, but it had a lot of stuff in it that we didn't want, but we lobbied for it, and that was one of the things that I did. And then we made countless trips to Nashville over the years. We have a lobby day down there every year, mm-hmm. and we have soccer bills we find sponsors for, and when we lobby for them, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
So what did you think you would be when you were young, when you were a little girl? What did you imagine that you would be in your life?
I can't remember. I was real into basketball in high school, and we didn't have enough money for me to go to college, and then I worked a couple of years. Of course, Berea is a school where you work your way through. Mm-hmm. And I found out that I wasn't prepared for college in a lot of ways. Our high school was very limited. We could only offer what the state required because we didn't have enough students and enough teachers. And so I only took the basic courses. So I had to take some remedial classes when I went to Berea. And of course, are you going to edit this? Do you edit it?
I can. Yes, we can edit.
Okay. I got involved with my children's daddy, mm-hmm. and so that's what brought me out of college. And I was involved with him for about 10 years, and by that time I had started, you know, started working in an insurance office, and I learned it rather fast, and I came back to work in that, and I was constantly taking insurance courses for a number of years, and I love the work. I love the working with people, mm-hmm. and then too, it was it was a little bit of a conflict. You know, insurance is very business oriented, and some of the things I was doing in soccer was right opposite that, mm-hmm. and I had some bosses that didn't approve of soccer, and so that was a little bit of a problem from time to time, but I guess in my early days, I really wanted to be a top-notch secretary, sort of like Della Street, you know, the working for a lawyer. That, mm-hmm. that was intriguing to me. But after I had my kids, I had to raise them, and I got so involved in insurance that, and I really enjoyed it. And I didn't look for anything else to do. Mm-hmm. But I've always regretted that I didn't graduate at Berea, because it is an excellent school. Mm-hmm. And I have one or two good friends from there yet. I haven't heard from them the last 5 or 6, well, since I retired. Mm-hmm. Sort of lost contact, but I know how to reach them if I was able and had time and that sort of thing. But I'm still real close to my insurance women friends in Knoxville. And my soccer friends, that's the two bases of my main friends that I have.
Can you describe your experience of civil rights, the civil rights movement?
I actually did not work in the civil rights. Even though I read about it, mm-hmm. and I wished that I had had nerve to go out and carry a sign, because my daddy was, he couldn't stand racism. In his early days, he had worked with a carnival and had traveled all over the United States, or at the eastern part of it, as a young man working with the carnival. And this was before he went to work in the mines. And I guess he had 3 or 4 kids before he went to work in the mines, and he worked there probably 25 years, I think. But my daddy never, see, we were never around any black people when we grew up, because none live in Scott County. There's a few here now, but in those days there were none. But my daddy always taught us to respect the black people. And he was very much, but now he has had a brother, a half brother, that was as racist as anybody ever came. Been. And that was the one thing that they were really different in. But my daddy would never allow us to, you know, talk against black people or anything like that. He just wouldn't allow it. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us in our family have a pretty broad knowledge of, you know, the problem. Now, my sister Faye lived in Maryland during when they had some of the riots up there. Mm-hmm. And I remember her telling about not thinking anything about it. She went to the shopping center and had her kids with her. And her car had Tennessee license on in Scott County. Scott County's always been a county that black people didn't come to. They were scared to.
Why were they scared?
Because of the county was just very much against black people. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know how they knew
that
much
police?
About it. Don't know the history behind it.
Uh-huh.
But she came out of a store with her kids one day, and it was right during those riots, and the blacks had surrounded her in that parking lot. She said it scared her to death. She didn't know what to do. So she went to the store manager. It's a grocery store. And he got the police to go out and get the people away from her car.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of escorted her to her car. And she said, I got out of that parking lot very fast. And she said, I did not go back to the grocery store during this time and those problems. And that was in, what, 63? Something like that. And she said, I stayed away, you know, because she said, we had those Tennessee license plates on our car. And she said, I was scared. And so that's the only experience that I ever know of.
Mm-hmm.
That anybody in the family had. But I've often wished that I had, because I very much supported these people sitting at the, you know, at the
lunch counters
mm-hmm. and marching and that sort of thing. But I guess it was just an in-between period in my life when, you know, I didn't belong to Saucon then. Didn't belong to anything except Baptist Church and insurance. I hadn't even joined the insurance women then. Even though I'd worked in insurance for 10, 15 years, I did not belong to the, there is a National Association of Insurance Women. And at one time, when I joined in 1969, 75, it was the largest women's organization, or maybe the second largest women's organization in the country. We had like 22,000 members.
Mm-hmm. And what was the function of the organization?
It was to promote insurance education, fellowship among our members, and just mostly education. But the United States is divided up into 9 divisions and 9 regions. And our region had 6 states in it. And so I finally joined in 1975. And I became their president 3 or 4 years after that. And was real active in it until I retired.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoyed, did quite a bit of traveling within these 6 states. We always had 3 conventions a year, state, regional, and national. I went to 2 or 3 national conventions, but most of them was in the 6 state region.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always had the same group travel together,
mm-hmm.
and really enjoyed that. I'm real close yet to these women.
So as a working woman in this organization, did you consider yourself at all a part of the women's movement that was going on in the 70s?
Part of what?
The women's movement.
Oh, not anything other than the insurance women,
mm-hmm.
being active in that. And of course I didn't, during that time, we had a lot of sickness in our family for about 15 years. And so I was running to Scott County every weekend. And I just didn't have time. But even though I was very much for the feminist things that were going on. In fact, I think I did join NOW at one time and got their magazine, but I never actually did anything. Maybe wrote a few letters. But
in a personal, individual sense, you were for women's rights. And
yes.
Did you consider yourself a feminist?
Well, I guess so, in a way.
What did that mean, to be a feminist?
Well, I mean, a lot of women I knew and grew up with didn't believe in that a woman should go out and get a job and get as much education on her own. But that brings you back to the area that I came from, where women were considered, they thought they should stay at home, raise a family. And that's about as far as they were willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always felt like a woman should do as much as she wanted to and could, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's for everything for women's rights. I mean, we just elected our first woman to the county commission, and I was thrilled to death. I don't know her very well, but I was been bragging about it to all these people around here.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not even in my district, but I was campaigning for her,
mm-hmm.
because I wanted, I said, we need a woman on that board. So I'm very much for women doing anything, and I was for Hillary for president.
Were you?
Yes, I was,
mm-hmm.
very much so. And my son, Randy, he's a Republican, so conservative. Oh my Lord, we fight all the time, just as sure as we can. Well, it's come to the point now that we just don't discuss politics very much, because we're so different about it. And he is, Randy works hard, but he is so conservative and selfish. I mean, he knows I think that, so I don't guess it's no secret.
But why is he conservative?
Well, I guess he saw how hard I had to work to raise them, and he started working when he was 14,
mm-hmm.
during the summer, and he and Scott both started working as soon as they could. They used to work as bus boys at the Quality Inn. Do you remember Malfunction Junction in Knoxville?
No.
It's right where 275 and 40 comes together. There used to be a motel there called Quality Inn.
Uh-huh.
And they both worked as bus boys when they were in high school. And I don't know. And he's just, he won't get involved in politics at all. He goes and votes, and if you ask him, he'll state his opinion, but he wants no part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very conservative, and he has come up with this idea. He told me the other day, he said, I was mowing my grass, and he said, I have decided the best thing Scott County can do is to buy a laptop computer for every student in this county, put them online, and let them be sort of like homeschooled. I said, Randy, how the parents wouldn't make their kids get their lessons? You know that. Hey, Scott County has got a big debt. And he said, you know, I think they owe somewhere $42 to $50 million. And that's a big debt for a county this size. And he said, it's no telling how much they're going to have to raise taxes. They've had to build 2 new schools.
Mm-hmm.
And one is just opened up. And then they're adding a big addition to another school. Well, they're just, between the, and then with the Oneida School District, they're coming up with $18 million additional debt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to have a big property increase. There's just no way around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that bothers him. Well, in Knoxville that had a child. And and then they had Erica, and that's his only biological child is Erica. And so he raised Robbie from the time he was 6. He'll be 35 in October. And he's a very bad diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in Knoxville. And and then this wife, Susan, Erica's mother, died when Erica was 9 with cancer. And then 2 years later, he married LaDawn, his current wife, and she had 2 boys. And they were, I think one was in 8th grade and the other was a freshman when they got married. So he sort of helped her raise her 2 boys. And so he's got 3 stepsons and one daughter. And he's always had to work hard, you know. And of course, Susan worked at MPC in Knoxville. She had a good job. And then LaDawn, and actually LaDawn was a friend of Susan's. And they had worked together at MPC. And LaDawn had several good jobs in Knoxville. And then she has fibromyalgia.
Mm.
And she has a lot of medical problems now,
mm-hmm.
but she's still one of the hardest working women I know. And she loves fooling with those animals. And she paints, and she is a computer whiz. She puts videos together and all that stuff. She worked for Pilot Oil in Knoxville. It's where she learned a lot of her computer knowledge that she has. And but he's just always had to work hard and puts in a lot of hours on that job he has.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had hoped and had planned on retiring when he was 55 and living on his savings until he got Social Security age, and he wanted to buy a bigger farm and farm. He loves it. But with her medical problems, he's not going to be able to do that because of insurance. She cannot get medical coverage without it costing an arm and a leg.
Right.
So he's going to have to work until he's at least 62. And he hadn't planned on that at all. But
can I ask you a few more questions about Sachem? Can you say a little bit about the role of women at the grassroots working in that organization?
Well, in a lot of the, before we became chapters, I believe that women more or less let the men do, be the spokesman. There was a few of us that was pretty outspoken, but most of the time it was the men. But then after we organized into where we have a chapter system, I believe that if you went and looked at a lot of these chapters, you will find that women do more of the work than the men do.
Why do you think that is?
Well, just by, I don't get to go very much anymore.
But what about in the earlier years?
But in the earlier, well, I think that we had more leadership training, and we always got as many women involved as we could. And I think that that's where it came from, that, you know, the leadership that we did, the training they got, and they ended up being the ones that were standing up doing most of the talking. I mean, that's something you could check with staff, but I think they would agree with me.
I've heard that from other people, too.
Yeah. I think that is the training that we gave in these chapters, and it just came about naturally.
Do you think the men in the communities were okay with that?
Yeah, at least the ones that I know seem to be. I know, I think of this one couple in Caraville that's in the Campbell County chapter, and she is very outspoken. I think she'll talk faster, but she'll talk quicker than Marvin will. And they have their own business, and I don't know exactly what they sell, something, mostly by internet, I think, but in meetings that I'm at, that I've seen them at, she tends to talk quicker than he does. So I sort of think that she is the more dominant Sokka member. Of course, one of her brother was a Sokka president at one time. So, and then I have noticed in these new chapters that we have down in Middle Tennessee, that I think it's more women that are involved. And I think that might, one reason may have been the staff person we had down there. She was the first black that we hired, Rochelle. And she doesn't work for Sokka anymore. But she was the one that was the staff person that we put down there to work in those chapters. And she was a social worker trained person. And I think that that she ended up talking to more women than she did men. And I see that they're more active. We do have one couple, Johnny Ferris, in Bedford County, I believe it is. Could be Murray County. Johnny seems to, his wife is always with him, but he is the one that served on the board. And I don't know many of them because I, in the last 10, since, well, since 2001. I haven't been able to be real active. And I read everything they send me.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I get the board minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been able to keep up with what the staff's doing and what's going on in all the different chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the last 3 months I haven't looked at it as closely because I had a pretty rough time the last part of March. I spent 8 days in the hospital, and so I haven't been able to keep up with it as much since then.
Mm-hmm.
But I
it's all right.
Alzheimer's patient, sad case.
Mm-hmm. Well, what were your biggest challenges? What were the biggest challenges that you faced as a member and organizer for SACM?
I guess the biggest thing was to shut my mouth sometimes. I mean, it never bothered me to talk. And I guess when I was president of SACM, the biggest thing I had was to, we had a few people that, and they were professional people, two of them were lawyers, that came to our meetings, and they expected everything to just be clockwork. You have a 2-hour meeting, you leave. Well, when you go to some of these communities, you might have 15 people that wanted to have their say. So when I was facilitating the meeting, I tended to let these people talk longer than I probably should have. So it was to balance that. I guess that was my biggest challenge while I was an officer,
mm-hmm.
was doing that. But I believed that this was the only time these community people had a chance to say what they wanted to say. And I felt like we should give them as much time as we could because that was their only chance, because they probably wouldn't come to the meeting that we had, you know, 3 or 4 counties away the next time because they couldn't afford to. Because we're working mostly with low-income people, trying to get, you know, the chapter. Well, at that time we didn't even have chapters. We just had communities. That's when we were in 5 counties.
Mm-hmm.
And what was going on in one community was not going on in a, well, we always had the strip mining, but things that were concerning these people was not happening in another county, like the swinging bridge issue
mm-hmm.
on New River. You know, that wasn't happening anywhere else, and not many other people were involved with it other than the ones that went to the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you say a little more about why you think it was so important to have local people? We were talking a little bit before we started the interview about how maybe you fear that local people aren't going to be as involved, the common people, I think, as you
yeah.
call them. So can you talk about why that's important, why that's crucial?
Well,
to the
I think that that's how you get things done. What I always say in SACM is, in the early days, it was strip mining we were working on, but now each chapter have their own issue, and I don't care what becomes a SACM issue if it involves the majority of the people in a chapter or in a county, for instance, and if you can get the people, you know, 20 or 30 people, we have a requirement, 30 members, if you can get 30 people to agree on an issue in their chapter or in their county to work on, I'm for it, if it is something that will be better for that community, and those people determine that. It doesn't bother me, it's tickled me to death that they're getting involved in education in some of these chapters, because it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And down in one of our chapters, I don't know a lot about it, but they were working on preschool or the Head Start, some kind of program. And they ended, they weren't happy with the way the director was doing. So they got this director to resign. And they're sort of taking it over. And it's being reorganized and hopefully going to be better. And if that's what that group of people decided they wanted to work on, and that's the best thing for them, I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because I realize that, you know, right here we have one of the biggest problems in this county is that it's the fifth largest county in the state, but we only have 21, maybe 22,000 people. But area-wide, I mean, it's so spread out, and we've got Huntsville, Winfield, and Oneida as towns in this one county, and they've all got different problems. I don't know a lot about them because I haven't lived here in so long.
Mm-hmm.
Until I came back over here after I was sick when I came back and came into the nursing home. But it just, the counties are so different. Like Anderson County is not near as big as Scott County is, but they've got three or four times as many people, you see, so there's different problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very important that everybody be involved. And it tickles me to death to see women taking more active roles in everything.
Mm-hmm. What have been your proudest moments in Sauckham?
My proudest moment in Sauckham, gosh. Well, we lost a lot of fights. I don't know. I had a lot, I guess. Getting to know all the people that I know. Getting some of the state to vote on and passing a few things, and right now I can't think of anything, and getting the knowledge out about these overloaded trucks. And getting the attention that got at the time was one of the highlights. I guess passing the National Strip Mining Bill in 1977 was another one that didn't have some of the things in it that we lobbied for. But I guess probably the best thing is when OSM was formed and it took the regulations away from the state of Tennessee to regulate strip mining, and we got the OSM office in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
And we argue with them all the time, even yet. Over permits and that sort of thing, but I'm still not happy with the director of OSM. But I guess that was probably one of the biggest things is just seeing the regulations taken away from the coal industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because the state did whatever the coal people told them to.
Mm-hmm.
See, my brother worked for West Coal Company. And that was one of the biggest strip miners in the state. And there was a guy that was worked for the coal industry as a lobbyist in Nashville named Bill Vaughn. And just getting to see him not have as much power as he had before.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it wasn't as evident. He probably still had more than we thought, because there was no doubt about it. They bribed the government, you know, to get by with driving these overloaded trucks, and then some of the things that they did. I was never really involved with the permit fights, other than I might go and speak at something against a permit, but I didn't really know all the details about it, because the staff did all that. And then another thing is the SCP connection with soccer was real gratifying to me. And there I met a whole different group of people. You know, the SCP was made up of people from three or four states and different issues. And so what SCP was organized in order to train community organizers. That was its sole purpose, was to teach people to be community organizers. Because we were finding, even though these people that we hired for Sockham and the other grassroots groups were college educated, their education didn't teach them nothing about community organizing. And that's why we needed this school. And June and Walter Davis and Rosemary were the three staff people for SCP, and that was their responsibility to have this school each year at Maryville and train community organizers. They did a super job until things went downhill, and I don't know all of the details why June left. I've seen her one time since she left SCP. I saw her at the party they had for Maureen last year. Now, I have talked to her a few times, but it's more or less when she's called. She's heard about some of my health problems, and she's called to find out about that. But that was a very important and another learning time for me. To the work we did, and all of the different organizations in West Virginia, they were just starting the. Mountaintop removal was getting started in West Virginia. That's where I first heard about it. Now we've got it over here. And we haven't been able to make any headway with Bresden on getting him. We were hoping that he would outlaw it in Tennessee, but he hasn't done it. And he won't do it. I guess that's about all I can think of. What other questions are on your?
Well, what do you think the state of things are right now for organizing work?
I think it's opening up a little bit from what I'm reading. You know, during the Bush years, there was a big need for it, but I don't know. I think that it was hard, very hard for him to do. I know we're not as far along in our 5-year plan. You know, every 5 years we had a new plan for Sockham, and when we evaluated our plans, we didn't always meet our goals. We don't have as many chapters as we had hoped to have at this point. But I think that things have opened up some. I hope they have, and I think there's better chance for it now. Mm-hmm. We're going to always have these issues. I mean, there's going to be an issue of something that needs to be worked on in every area. I mean, I've always, when we were revamping Sockham and going to the chapter system, I remember John Gavina said he wanted to see Sockham grow far and wide in Tennessee. And we've done some of that, but not, see, we haven't got to do, we tried it in Johnson City and Kingsport up in that area, but it didn't work out. We tried it in Morristown, and it didn't work out. I mean, it did for a while, but then it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping that it will get easier.
Those are all my questions. We're starting to, I know that you have to go eat lunch before church, but are there any other topics that you want to talk about? Or
well, the one other thing that I'm real proud of is my involvement in the Mountain People's Health Council, and that came about from some of my Sockham work. In this 5-county area, a group of students from Vanderbilt was trying to look for money for health care, and they found out that a big portion of this county and the other counties too was owned by about 10 large landowners, but they paid like 3% of the taxes, and that's the big problem in this county. And so they did this land study and found all this information. So they turned it over to East Tennessee, I forget what it was called, and that's sort of where Sockham started from, with some of that research. And so they knew that there was a big need for health care, and we are in a very underserved area. So we got together and started this to raise awareness and raise money to have a health clinic in Norma, which is where I graduated from high school, and it's 5 miles down the road from Smoky. And so we bought a doctor's office up there, and he had been murdered, and we got his old office and turned it into a health clinic. Well, in order to have Mountain Peoples and to get the government money, we had to have so many population. So we paired up with Stony Fork in Anderson County and Petros in Morgan County, and we were able to get a doctor that went to all three clinics. And so that's how Mountain People was formed. Well, I became one of the board members, and one of the reasons was that one of the other people in the Mountain Peoples was all the time calling me. He was the high school principal, and he'd say, "Betty, would you go down and tell the East Tennessee, I forget what it's called, it's the 16 county area, East Tennessee." Anyway, we had to get the approval of Dr. Duffy at the Knoxville Health Department. And so he would have me go speak to this group about the medical needs over here. And so I told him that my mother had 11 children. I was the oldest one. And the rest of them, we'd all been born at home, but she had a midwife with her other 10. and just all the medical problems that I could think of is what I'd go tell them about. So finally I told Raymond, I'm gonna catch this, excuse me.
Hey. You were giving me my regular lunch today, aren't you? The Salisbury steak. That salad was really good last night. It was big.
Yeah.
I ate half of it for supper and then I snacked on it. I tried adding me some tomatoes and onions to it. But she really had too much cheese on it. Not that it was too much, it's just that it was too much for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really supposed to have that much cheese and I'm afraid it'll. But anyway, at the regular lunch, then I'll talk to you about supper.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You can never get them on the phone.
That's good.
But anyway, Mountain Peoples is now 35 years old,
mm-hmm.
36, something like that. And they have got a clinic in Winfield, one in Oneida, one in Huntsville, and one at Norman, all in Scott County. And I don't know exactly how many doctors they have, but they use nurse practitioners quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they've got one at each clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Norman clinic's not open all week, but it's like 3 days a week or something like that. And if the rules haven't changed, a doctor has to be on site one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can use nurse practitioners for most of it. I think they've got about three doctors, but two just left and went into private practice here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many they have left or if they've replaced these two yet, because
mm-hmm.
I'm not involved with it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I served 4 years on that board and worked really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And how we got Dr. Duffy, I told Raymond Jeffers he was bringing some of them over here for a tour. And I said, Raymond, bring them down the river. And when you get to Nix Creek, drive through that river bed up there and let them see how rough it is. Because there was where the water goes across the road, it would always back up, the flood would, and it's got it real washed out. I'd say bring them down through there and let them see how rough the road is. And Dr. Duffy, after he brought her and a black man from Knoxville, and I don't know what his name was, down through there, and she never voted against our health clinic funds again. And
that
I
was
always
a smart
that,
move on your part.
Yeah, and so Raymond always said that I won Dr. Duffy's vote because I went and told her so many times about the midwife delivering everybody, and we did. There was a woman named Rosie Gibson that delivered. I guess she delivered 3,000 or 4,000 kids
mm-hmm.
in her lifetime. Her granddaughter is a patient here now.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother liked her better than she did Dr. Chambers that delivered me. But he would say that because of Dr. Duffy coming down the rough road and my talks to that group over there is what got her vote finally.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a very rewarding thing is seeing the success of the health clinics.
Mm.
And Scott County does have a better medical system than it had back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what a lot of the problems are, but we have three or four doctors that won't use the hospital. And I've never been involved in any of that, so I don't know why those problems are. But that has been one of the biggest things, and Stockham was involved in that
mm-hmm.
indirectly because of JW and Kate that were president of the Petros Clinic,
mm-hmm.
and some miners up in Stony Fork were involved in the Stony Fork Clinic,
mm-hmm.
and so it's you know, something's been involved in a lot of things
mm-hmm.
over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed the SCP work.
Mm-hmm.
That was mostly, you know, finding these people to take the training and then finding the money to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still needed. It's probably needed more now
mm-hmm.
than it was. And see, now SOCM, I think, sends people to different schools. That's a requirement when we hire somebody. They go take some training
mm-hmm.
somewhere. And we pay for it. And that's one of the reasons for requiring them to work for 2 years, you know, to sort of pay for what we've invested in them.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you'd like to close with?
Well, I can't really think of anything. I just wished I was able to stay as involved with SOCM as I was. But it's just impossible. I don't drive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to me was I had an infection. They probably told you that I'm on dialysis.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very bad day Friday. That's why I've got this.
Oh, I'm sorry.